I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Ballot Talks on Radio Times. The Democrats are coming. Philadelphia is hosting the Democratic National Convention in the summer of 2016, having beaten out Brooklyn, New York, and Columbus, Ohio. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chair of the DNC, made that announcement last week. Winning this high-profile gig was the work of a number of prominent Philadelphians, including our guest, Congressman Bob Brady. Using his unique Philadelphia charm and determination, Brady said he hugged Wasserman Schultz every day, except for one day when he bear-hugged her chief of staff when she wasn't available, and apparently it worked. Bob Brady has represented Philadelphia in Congress for almost 20 years, and he's been the chair of Philadelphia's Democratic Party since 1986, and he joins us here in our Philadelphia studio. Bob Brady, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Nice to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So hugs and what else?
Hugs and a whole lot of work. You know, I started this, I guess they're not calling me a dreamer, but the world needs dreamers. If it wasn't for Christopher Columbus's dream, you wouldn't be here, you know. But we started in 2011. We had a chance to do the 2012 convention. And at that particular time, and I agree with the mayor, we weren't ready. We were coming out of a recession. Well, no city was really ready, but, you know, he thought that we would pass, and he made a commitment to me. He kept it that we would try to do the 216. So fast forward to maybe like the 212, and we just started this thing rolling. You know, we just started. Again, he was a little reluctant. He didn't want to put any city assets, money, and I understood and agreed with him. So he said to me, if you could put some good people together and put this piece together, he says, and don't cost any money to our city, he said, I would entertain it. So I put a meeting of about 20 people, prominent people that I thought were prominent, the tourist people, you know, the lawyers, the labor, political people, the head of the Senate, the head of the council president. Jimmy Kenney was a big cheerleader with me, you know. And we put those people together, and Merle Levis was really a main person there.
Convention Tourist Bureau.
Because she said that projecting in 2016 would be a major low year for the city of Philadelphia as far as tourists are concerned. And she said the 2000 convention, she still sees a residue of people coming back and say, I was here in 2000 and whatever. So that's, you know, how many years ago? So she was all for it. And then I went around the room. We had, like I said, we had major law firms. I had Delaware County chairman, had Montgomery County chairman, and Josh Shapiro, who was Montgomery County commissioner. I had him there. And then we got to go ahead for most of the people that I thought there would be, that I needed, we needed to convince other people, you know. And I just took off with it. You know, we did all our due diligence. We called, it's funny, myself and my guy with me all the time going down to Washington. We have a deal. We don't talk business until we hit 95 because all he does is have one idea after another. Kenny Smucker, God bless him, you know, one idea after another. And it was this, again, him pushing the convention in 212 and now that we have a 216 shot. And so we figured we got to get the venue, you know, Wells Fargo. So we called down there and they said, we don't think we can do it. And I said, why? I said, we got a tractor pull. I said, give me a tractor pull. Doing them dates that, and they're doing some renovation. So I got kind of like disturbed at that. And then knowing who I know, Ed Snyder being one of them, talked to him. He said, tractor pull. I'll put a tractor pull in his backyard. We're going to, if you get the convention, whatever date you need, we're going to get it, you know.
Well, what I hear from all of this is that you know a lot of people. I mean, you grew up in this town. You are politically connected. You're known as someone who makes deals, mostly kind of not behind closed doors necessarily, but not necessarily out in public, out in front. Would that be fair?
I make arrangements.
You make arrangements.
We don't make deals. But I do know people, and, you know, I've been around for a while, and I've always been helpful any way I can. And but this idea for the convention, a lot of people were on board. It wasn't something that it was off the wall somewhere. It's great for the city. It's a great boost. It puts us on national world TV for a whole week, you know, and it's exciting and it's a lot of money. You tell me anywhere from $300 to $400 million
for the city.
Yeah.
Though money does have to be raised, and this would be, I guess, money outside of the city coffers to be raised for this convention, something like, what, $85 million?
$80 to $85 million. What we had to do, we had to put $10 million in escrow, which, again, who do I go to? But the best money raiser and cheerleader I know, I went to Ed Rendell. And after this 20-so people we met, I figured we got to make this a broader-based meeting. And I showed you the list. There's nobody on this list that isn't somebody. This is somebody. You know,
on every level.
You know, again, labor and law firms, the Democrats, Republicans, you know. And I called that Rendell. Actually, again, Jimmy Kenney said he spoke with Rendell. Called him. He's interested. So I called the governor. I said, Ed, I said, you know, we're going to try to get this thing. Because I was involved with him and David Cohen in 2000 in putting it together. We had some labor problems. So we solved them. And they had me on board for the whole thing for 2000 for the Republican.
Right.
And I said, Ed, I'm 100% total. I'm there. I'm in, you know. And I cleared the schedule. We put a meeting together, like I said, about 70 people from everywhere. You know, we expanded our list. And at that meeting, I announced, unbeknownst to Rendell, that he was going to be the chairman, which he
did
liked.
Did he know that?
No, not until I, you know. But I knew he would take it, you know. But I told him he was going to be the chairman. And the chairman of the host committee said he would do that. And part of it was to be able to raise the money. So after our meeting, he called another little meeting right after that with maybe like the people in that room he knew, maybe 10 or 12 people. And we had to put $10 million in escrow. I think he might have raised that in a week. And the escrow was if we didn't get the convention, we would get the money back. And everybody that he talked to, and I talked to different labor people, different, you know, our legal community, they all said they'll double, triple down if we get the convention. So I don't think there'll be any problem.
You don't anticipate a money problem.
Not at all.
As you mentioned, Mayor Nutter was kind of reluctant in 2012. His argument was that the city was kind of coming out of recession. It seemed like perhaps a risky thing to do. Has he been on board for 2016?
Absolutely, 100%. You know, I put the two meetings together. I told him I was doing it, you know. And, you know, and he said, you put the right people together. He said, but you got to put the right people together. You got to get the commitment. He says, then we'll be 100%. He's been 100%. Him and his staff have been 100%. A great cheerleader also. He's going down tonight. DNC meeting tonight, hosting a reception for our Democratic National Committee people with Rendell and me, you know. And he's been 100% on board.
How much trash talking was going on between Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and Columbus, Ohio?
Well, you know what? We made a decision that we're not going to do that. And another shout-out to a guy by the name of Kevin Washoe. Kevin Washoe was the executive director of our state committee. I knew him then. And then he had a group together that they did Charlotte. So I talked to him in 2012, right after Charlotte. And I said, look, we're interested in doing the 16. Would your group be interested in helping us? Because they did the bid. They knew how the process worked. They had the inside information, you know, institutional knowledge how to do that. And he agreed. And he put a presentation on the first meeting. Then he put a great presentation on the second big meeting. And we hired him, you know, and he's really, really doing an excellent job with this, and he's going to do an excellent job, you know.
So no trash talk necessarily. And well, I asked that. Happened, I read about Rendell sending clippings about bed bugs and hot subways to the DNC.
Well, the only thing we agreed on, we weren't going to bash them in any way, shape, or form, and we weren't going to do a media blitz. When they came in for the site committee and spent the whole day and most of the night with us, we didn't bring all the press. I mean, press came, but we didn't have like a major press thing, you know. Although New York did every time they came in, whatever they came in, they had all the press around them, and Columbus did also, and they kept touting themselves, whatever. And then when Debbie Wasserman Schultz came in for a retreat, we showed her around because she didn't come for the site committee. It was a designated committee that did that. And we had no press at all. Didn't even know, you know.
By design.
Yep. We weren't going to do the press thing. We were going to let our city sell itself. And the city did sell itself.
Are there political reasons in that Pennsylvania is still considered a swing state, although it did go for Barack Obama two times, but certainly it's important to get the vote out in Philadelphia for the 2016 election. How much did that play into this decision?
I'm sure it played a lot because, again, you know, we have that Philadelphia and Allegheny County, and then we have what they call Alabama in between. You know,
you think that's true?
It is true. You know, we have a lot of.
Are you seeing a bunch of racists in the middle of Philadelphia?
not racist, just Republican, hardcore Republicans. But and the Philadelphia gets a large turnout to be able to carry the state. But the other thing is the media market. We still go into New Jersey, which we have a governor that has an interest in maybe running. So we would have a nice partial half of the New Jersey our medium market covers all South Jersey, you know, so it will be a good show for them. And they're really a swing state. You know, we don't necessarily are a swing state anymore. We're not, you know, we're listed as a blue state, you know, but we would have the media market that would go into New Jersey, which mattered, you know. And then again, we had to get a big vote out of Philadelphia to carry the rest of the part of the state.
How much do you have to worry about things like security? And I'm thinking about, you know, when you have, what, tens of thousands of people and you have the president of the United States coming, people that are of high office coming to a city like Philadelphia. How much do you have to take that into consideration?
It was a main factor, security, logistics, and finances, which was the driving force in winning a bid for the convention. When we took them down to the Wells Fargo, which is our stadium complexes, it's already gated off. And it's enormous parking, and it's an easy place to have security because there could be police officers. And what happened since 9/11, anywhere we go as congresspeople, we have the Capitol Police and the Secret Service have to come with us.
They go with them.
Right. We had a retreat 2 weeks ago. It was all Capitol Police. They all take care of our security, and with help with the Philadelphia Police Department, and actually working together. And they love the site for the security reasons. You know, they had the big fence all around. It can be cordoned off. You know, only certain people can get in and out certain exits when you show credentials. And the media love the parking lot. They can put a whole bunch of vehicles there. They put a bunch of media tents there. And then a lot of the delegates like the parking lot because they like they were tailgating there. We could get that. We can have enough room for that. And then we got Broad Street, largest street in the nation, in a major city.
Is that true?
It goes from one side, goes right through the center, right through Philadelphia, from one side all the way south, all the way up to north, right through. And we have the subway there. When we have our sporting events, they put the special cars on. SEPTA was ready to do that. We would have our shuttles coming up down Broad Street. Probably we'll have to close off Broad Street, but it's a perfect shot, straight on down through Center City and most of the hotels.
We're almost having a break here, but do you suggest Philadelphians get out of town when the Democrats come to town?
No, I think they should enjoy themselves. They should enjoy the show. You know, it's a lot of Center City, and maybe you can spill off into our neighborhoods. And when I tell our delegates, I give them a list of restaurants where to go, and I give them a lot of the great little mom and pop restaurants that, you know, that aren't the big name restaurants, but still do a great job.
So the idea is everyone can stay here and enjoy whatever the Democrats are enjoying?
Absolutely. You'll see it on TV, and if they want to take a walk or take a ride out, you know, they can be a part of it. Absolutely. You know, it's our city, and our city shows off itself.
And that's Bob Brady, our guest in this edition of Ballot Talks on Radio Times. We are talking about the fact that last week, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chair of the Democratic National Committee, announced that Philadelphia would be hosting the Democratic National Convention in the summer of 2016. A number of people in the city involved in making this happen, including our guest, Congressman Bob Brady. He has represented Philadelphia in Congress for almost 20 years, and he's been the chair of Philadelphia's Democratic Party since 1986. We're going to take a very short break. Get back to our conversation. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And Bob Brady staying with us for about 10 minutes, then we'll be shifting gears, talking with the New York Times' Maggie Haberman about Hillary Rodham Clinton. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia, and here come the Democrats. Philadelphia will be hosting the 26th Democratic National Convention in July. Our guest is U.S. Congressman Bob Brady, a key player in this effort to bring the convention to the city and to join our conversation. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. What do you think of this, and where would you tell the delegates to go once they come to the city? We want to know about that as well. Let me get David from Northeast Philadelphia to join us. David, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I'm a registered Democrat in Northeast Philadelphia, a lifelong registered Democrat. And my question is, considering that the presidential election is an exercise in democracy, how will the rampant corruption in the Democratic Party in both Philadelphia and Pennsylvania serve as a backdrop to the upcoming convention?
And what rampant corruption are you talking about, David?
Bob McCord, I'm sorry, State Treasurer McCord, the current indictment against Elizabeth Cain, Philadelphia Traffic Court, the state legislatures that are under indictment in Philadelphia.
Things like that. Fair enough. Yes. Let me give Bob Brady a chance to respond to that.
You know, unfortunately, we're not really unique in the United States of America. There's those things that happen in New York, and they happen in Columbus, and they happen in other places. Unfortunately, it is unfortunate that they are happening now. But I think that by the time we come in with our convention, I think that hopefully that that'll be behind us. You know, and people make mistakes, and they should learn from other people's mistakes. And unfortunately, we have some people that don't.
David, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me see what Raphael from the Graduate Hospital area has to say. Raphael, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. Go ahead.
I was wondering, I'm a small business owner in the Philadelphia area, and I was wondering how small business owners might be able to go ahead and offer their services to the Democratic National Convention.
We have a website, and I apologize. I do not know off the top of my head what it is, the website for the convention. But all small businesses, what I'm doing with my colleagues, naturally, you can imagine they're all bugging me for the best restaurants and where to go here and better hotel rooms and all those certain things. What I'm doing, I give them a list of things that I think that they should see. And most of that list is all mom and pops. You're in the graduate area, the hospital area, so you're not too far from, you know, what's going on. And we need everybody to participate. I've gotten already about six venues that people want to, large venues and small venues that people want to participate. You know, the Chickie and Pete's want to do a plate thing. The Union League wants to do something. The Sheet Metal Wall Workers want to do something.
All familiar names.
Sugar House wants to do something, but also you too. We would like to, you know, what kind of business are you in?
Yeah, what kind of business, Raphael?
I provide ID security, ID badging.
Oh, interesting. ID badging.
I work for a company. It's a new company called Philadelphia ID. We're a subsidiary of the largest supplier in the Northeast called IDESCO.
Okay. Again, I apologize for that. This is a brand new website, but it'll be advertised, and you'll be able to, you know, to click on it, and I will talk to our people because we're going to certainly need ID badges, you know. And I would love to help the small mom and pops. That's what I'm about, you know, and trying to help them and let everybody be a part and everybody gain and, you know, get a financial up, you know, not just the main hotels and restaurants. Let everybody else get a financial gain from this.
Raphael, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Probably Google and
yeah, it'll pop up.
Some version of the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia and something will pop up. Are you concerned that this will be more a coronation than a convention? And at this point, I mean, no one on the Democratic side is a well, maybe Bernie Sanders, but everyone's eyes are on Hillary Rodham Clinton. Will she, won't she? Certainly looks like she's going to run. And the concern is that if she runs, no one else runs, and she becomes the candidate without any kind of debate, without any kind of challenge from another Democrat.
Well, I hope so. And the reason why I hope so is because we can save money.
You know,
instead of running against each other, you know how much the money people spend on these things is astounding. And if you don't have a major primary opponent, that money could be saved. And there'll be enough debate, I'm sure, between the Republican candidate and the Democratic candidate. You know, 6 months in between, you know, it'll be an April primary and a November election. There'll be debates like we have, you know, with Barack Obama debating McCain. You know, there'll be a lot of that and issues. And issues are pretty much cut and dry, you know. Everybody's going to put their best foot forward. They're going to throw mud at each other, as we always do. Everybody's going to do no negative campaign. But the problem with negative campaigns is that it works. But we won't have each other. We won't have Democrats banging with each other, you know. And the way it looks now, I mean, Senator Vice President Biden has an interest, but he said that he won't run against her, you know. And it would be a lot of cost saving. We could save money and be able to just go toward who the opponent may be in the Republican Party.
But don't you think sometimes the primary process is a good exercise for someone to make them a better candidate?
Well, I think that she's been through the candidate mill already. You know, I think what you know, what you see is what you get. I call in the city of Philadelphia, it was a bloodbath with primaries. I call them a family squabble, family feud, because we do run against each other. And then my hardest job as being the chairman is after the primary, put pieces back together. And it takes the time. And it works out that, you know, look, you beat my candidate, you beat the person I voted for, I'm not mad at you, blah, blah, blah. And hopefully we overcome that, you know. But she's been timed, she's been tested pretty much so, and be tested a whole lot. And, you know, has been already. It isn't like she's somebody brand new, you know. She's been around as a senator, been around as a secretary, you know. So she's been banged around a little bit, and she has a lot of good pluses, too.
That's Bob Brady, our guest in this portion of Ballot Talks on Radio Times. He's been representing Philadelphia in Congress almost 20 years. He's the chair of Philadelphia's Democratic Party, a job he's had since 1986. And he's one of a number of people that lobbied to have Philadelphia host the Democratic National Convention. And yes, indeed, it is coming to Philadelphia in the summer of 2016. To join our conversation, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Again, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Are you concerned that the media won't be as interested in this convention as they have in decades ago, when it was really unclear who the candidate was going to be and there was a lot of some drama and mystery on the floor of the convention? Media companies, especially the large networks, are pulling back on a lot of their coverage, thinking it's kind of a fait accompli.
We haven't had that since I've been around. We haven't had a broker's convention. President Obama, when we had our convention, was the nominee. There was nobody running against him. Prior to that, Bill Clinton, the same thing, you know. And then also with Al Gore, you know. We haven't had what they call a broker's convention yet, you know. By the time it comes to Philadelphia, it's mostly cut and dry because we're on the tail end, so to speak. You know, a lot of these conventions happen before it comes to us, and we don't become that kind of inside player so much, you know. So, but the media, they'll be all over each other. They'll be stepping
because
all over.
Because they're the media.
Because the media and the instant media that we have today, they don't want somebody else to have something that they don't have. We'll be inundated with media people down here. And that's the reason why, again, they love the Wells Fargo, because they got the space to set up.
And where will you be during this convention? Everywhere?
Yeah. I'm going to probably be hosting every night of an event, you know. And I'm a delegate, so I'll be going to the convention itself, which is usually like 7 to like 11, you know. So there'll be events in the morning, in the afternoon, and at night, you know. I'll be everywhere like everybody else.
And how much in something like this do personal relationships count or matter?
To be able to get this done?
Yes.
It's 100%.
100%?
100%.
Who you know, how you know them.
You know, look, excelling, look, you know, putting people together, the right people together. And what I did, again, important at this meeting with 70 people, I took about a half hour to make everybody introduce themselves, because they're looking, you know, I heard about you, but I didn't see you, and we had community people over here, and let everybody know that. And we had the cross-section, had Michael Meehan, the chairman, over the head of the Republican Party. We had a lot of Republican operatives there, you know, and they were looking around, and boy, you know, Brady got this person and Brady got that person, and everybody, you know, came together. And, you know, when we did the Republican convention, we had T-shirts made, Republican for a week. I put two events for our Republican colleagues, you know, and we were all together, and the Republicans, again, are feeling the same, doing the same thing, feeling the same way, you know, supporting this convention, supporting the city, supporting the state, and we're going to have a great show, and the city sells itself. We got the historical sites. We have, you know, the city itself is beautiful. We had the restaurants. We had the hotels. The city actually did sell itself with the site committee. They really enjoyed our town.
Let me see what Hugh from Westchester has to say. Hugh, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, I voted for every Democratic presidential candidate since 1964. How can average Democratic voters like myself participate in the convention?
Come on down and enjoy it. The events that I have are not just events that I'm going to. I'm already, just after a week, I got 3 nights already, and I'm sure I'm going to put on a couple of days. Again, everything's going to be advertised on the website. They're all free. Come down and enjoy it. Come down to some of our events. They're not a paid event. I am not doing any fundraising. I'm not doing that. Some people do, but that's on them. And it's open to the public, you know. And it'll be all advertised on our website, you know. And you're more than welcome. Matter of fact, you are welcome. I would love to have you come down to any event that I'm doing. There's, you know, there's no tickets.
What's the website?
Yeah, again, I apologize, but if you pull up any station, they'll have it on there. Because we don't have we're going to get another one. I don't want to give you the old one, but I think we already have it done. We'll get it done tonight. But any media will have it advertised in all the papers too.
Well, and Hugh, we'll put something on our homepage or our Facebook
page, or
we'll tweet it out so that you and others can know as well. Hugh, thanks for the call to Radio Times. We have an email from Rian. I would like to know how this convention is funded. Is it federal, state, and city tax dollars? How will this pay off enough to the citizens to justify that funding method?
No city money whatsoever, no state money. There'll be some money that is allocated for security because where we go, Congress now, the Capitol Police and the Secret Service have to go. So their budget will be increased for the Democrats and Republicans. But we're going to raise the $80 million, $85 million that's needed all through private funding. We're probably halfway there already. No city money whatsoever, no state money at all. And a little bit of federal money will probably be in the bill for security for us, you know, which they have to do. They have to do it by law. They have to know. Which since 9/11, they have to follow us around.
Will the public be know? Will they know who is funding this convention? Will that be made publicly available?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
I'm told there is a website, www.phldnc.com.
Thank you, whoever that is.
That's Emily Bryant, one of our producers here.
Thank you.
phldnc.com for information about the Philadelphia the Democratic National Convention coming to Philadelphia in the summer of 2016. As you have described, this is something that involves Democrats and Republicans here in the city. As we know, this is a largely Democratic town. In fact, next week on Ballot Talks on Radio Times, we're going to be talking about how to build a Republican Party in the city. Is that an important thing to have two strong parties in the city?
Sure. Sure it is. It's good to have that, have that open dialogue instead of just a one-party system, although we had it for the longest time. But I welcome that. I'm not worrying about that, you know. But again, we do have the Republicans that are supporting it. We supported the Republican convention in 2000. I had two night events and one afternoon event, which everybody came to, all my Republican colleagues came to. And I was inundated with requests. I can only imagine what I'm getting now. But I'm telling everybody I'm giving 15 cents off coupons.
Is that right?
No.
You're allowed to do that or not.
but it'll be a real good time. We get a real good chance to show off this beautiful city that we all live in and love.
Is there anything that keeps you up at night in anticipation?
No, not at all.
It's all going to work perfectly?
I think the right people, yes. I think the right people, we put the right people in place. We got the right people running it. We got all the cooperation, you know. It's just going to be it'll be a great time. And anything that happens that goes wrong, I don't want to know about it. Leave me alone.
Who takes care of that part if things go wrong?
Somebody else.
You?
I'm sure they will, but we'll deal with it, you know.
Let me see what Bilal from Chester County has to say. Bilal, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Good morning, Marty.
Morning.
And good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
What you got on your mind, Bilal?
I'm sorry?
What's on your mind?
My question is there any special attention that's going to be given to see to it that minority contractors get, a piece of the action?
Absolutely.
And thanks, Bob, for your help.
Thank you. How are you feeling?
I'm doing much better, thank
good.
You.
God bless you. Thinking of you. Thank
well,
you.
Well, and you have Bilal, you have to tell us who you are, because clearly Bob Brady knows who you are. Who are you?
He's a friend of Bob Brady.
What's that?
Just a caller and a friend of Bob Brady.
Yes, he's a Tinderbox fellow.
I don't know what that means. But
we did put a – we have a proponent going in to make sure that the minority participation is going to be absolutely there. It will be there. You know, Balak Kwam, who is somebody who's really involved in that, I spoke with him. I've been speaking
another
with
him. Another Bilal?
Yeah, Bilal.
Okay.
This is another one. And he is a big proponent of the business people, the African American, Minority Business Council. And we are absolutely positively going to have a proponent without question.
Bilal, thanks for your call to Radio Times. Bob Brady, thank you very much for joining us today on Radio Times. Again, has been a member of Congress representing Philadelphia for almost 20 years, and he is the chair of Philadelphia's Democratic Party, a job he's had since 1986, talking about the Democratic National Convention coming to the city in summer of 2016. Thanks for joining us
today. Thank you for having me.
On Radio Times. Nice to have you back with us.
Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Well, one person who is sure to show up at the convention is Hillary Rodham Clinton. Although she hasn't announced her candidacy, few people doubt her intentions to run. So far, polls against other possible contenders like Vice President Joe Biden or even Senator Elizabeth Warren show Clinton handily winning the Democratic nomination. Maggie Haberman is joining us now. She's presidential campaign correspondent for The New York Times, a formerly senior political reporter for Politico, and joining us from the NPR studios in New York. And Maggie Haberman, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me. Sorry for the delay.
Oh, no problem. So is Hillary Rodham Clinton running for president?
Oh, I think so. I think so. And I think she's been running for a while. I think even if she had not quite gotten there in her mind, I think every behavior indicated that she was running. I expect that we will see her formally declare something sometime after April. But I think we're still a few months away.
I mean, has there been a kind of advantage to her to not say that she's running, even if she is running, because it keeps the speculation out there?
Well, I think speculation is actually something she doesn't either benefit from or need more of. What I think helps her is that the longer, or at least I think that's their thinking, and you can make a counter argument, in their mind, the longer that she can go without being treated formally as a candidate, then she can keep a lot of scrutiny at bay, a lot of questions at bay. She doesn't have to weigh into every policy debate. She can kind of pick and choose her spots. She got in much earlier than she wanted to in 2007. Her hand was forced in large measure by then Senator Barack Obama getting ahead of her. He announced that he was going to form an exploratory committee and said when he did, and I will declare my candidacy in a few weeks, basically, in January of 2007. She had hoped to wait much longer in sort of a class front-runner Rose Garden pose. And remember, her husband is always sort of her guiding light on this. Her husband did not get into the presidential race until October of 1991.
Oh, wow. Wow. We know we just got you on the show, but Maggie, we have to take a very short break and then they're baked into this format here and then we'll get back to our conversation again.
Sounds good.
Maggie Haberman, presidential campaign correspondent for The New York Times. And we're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation, and we're talking about the will she, won't she, Hillary Rodham Clinton. To join our conversation, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Are you even sick of people talking about Hillary Rodham Clinton and whether she's going to run for president or not? Do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Ballot Talks on Radio Times. I'm talking with Maggie Haberman, presidential campaign correspondent for The New York Times. Maggie, you had a piece in the paper recently, the headline, Hillary Clinton privately seeks the favor of Elizabeth Warren. They had a one-on-one meeting. It sounds like it was at her house in Washington. This was Hillary Clinton's idea?
Yes, she reached out to Senator Warren. There had been some liaising between their worlds over the last few months. They also share a consultant, Mandy Grunwald, who has been a Clinton media advisor for over two decades now, but who also worked on Elizabeth Warren's 2012 Senate race. I think that and it was a private meeting. There were no staffers there. It was described as good and cordial. I don't think that they emerged as best friends, but I think that Hillary Clinton wanted to show interest and show that she was open to hearing what Senator Warren, who has really become an avatar for this economic populism on the left, had to say. What's interesting about Elizabeth Warren is she is, she's very in the weeds on policy. You saw with this Antonio Weiss fight in terms of him going to Treasury.
Yes.
She was very, very instrumental in helping block what he was in line for at Treasury. He ultimately did not go through the Senate confirmation process, but he is still at Treasury in a different job. She is picking her targets very, very carefully. I imagine that is part of what she wanted to hear from Hillary Clinton beyond just sort of broad strokes.
But do you think Hillary Clinton needs Elizabeth Warren's seal of approval to keep progressives in her camp?
I think she certainly needs her to not be criticizing her all the time. And I think that if you look at what Senator Warren has said, she's actually been very careful. She hasn't been really critical of Hillary Clinton, but nor has she been particularly warm or embracing. She did, however, sign that letter urging Hillary Clinton to run for president, which often gets forgotten. I don't think that Senator Warren is running. I have I've never really thought Senator Warren is running, although I think she may have been bitten by the bug at some point in the last 6 months. But I do think it is important for Hillary Clinton to not just hear what she has to say, but demonstrate that she is open to what Senator Warren has to say. Remember, a big criticism of Hillary Clinton in the 2008 primaries was that she was very guarded, very not open to criticism, did not bring in critics. And she, I think by taking this meeting, is demonstrating something very different.
Do you think that's just her personality, or she was getting bad advice from her campaign advisors?
I think that she tends to sort of pull the drawbridges up when things are difficult. I think that she is more comfortable in general right now. I think she also got some bad advice. And I think that she overread polls. And I think that was a toxic combination that she seems to be avoiding this time. I think that they are very mindful of not looking the way they did or she did in 2008, which was, you know, the inevitability slash entitlement problem. It's going to be difficult this time because there really is no Barack Obama type challenger on the horizon. Even Senator Warren was not that challenger, primarily because Senator Warren has actually run many fewer races than Senator Obama had. It's very important for Hillary Clinton to look like she is fighting for it, which is harder when you don't have sort of a living, right, breathing opponent.
Well, are there any living or breathing opponents? I know Bernie Sanders has made
He's living and breathing.
Yeah, is he actually a declared candidate?
No, there's nobody who's declared. Jim Webb, the former Virginia senator, has an exploratory committee. Martin O'Malley, the recently departed governor of Maryland, is, I think, going to run. But I think in this environment, it's going to be very hard for people to really mount a strong, credible challenge to her. I think the party is very unified behind her. And I think that beyond, even though there obviously is still some criticism on the left, the fact that you have so much of the Obama apparatus behind Hillary Clinton at this point, it is really A, unusual, and B, does put her in this sort of vice presidential role that she's obviously not in. But it creates a contiguity from the White House to her candidacy. Whether or not President Obama thinks this, I don't know, but a number of his advisors have long believed that she is his best hope for maintaining his legacy and not having things like Obamacare undone.
What's so interesting, though, is if you look at the Democratic field and the, you know, you've got this candidate that we're spending, or this alleged candidate we're spending all this time talking about, and then you look at the Republicans, and what is it, like 15 or 20 candidates so far? What explains these two very different parties, at least when it comes to people wanting to run for president?
It's a really interesting question. I mean, I think in the Republican Party, you know, it's the party out of power, so you have had much more of an internal the civil war that sort of always exists, even if it was sort of a lower grade version, for many years before the last six or so. But it's the party out of power, so it has been debating what it was in the post-Bush years, in the post-economic collapse years, and so forth. In terms of the Democratic Party, this is, you know, to your point, yes, it is very unusual, although there is some precedent, right? I mean, in 2000, even though Bill Bradley challenged Al Gore, and he was a real challenger, Al Gore was the dominant front runner. He was the vice president. He was seen as the heir apparent. That is that role that I was referring to before that Hillary Clinton is now filling, that Vice President Joe Biden, while I think that there is a piece of him that really would like to run, the oxygen just doesn't exist.
Do you think, and I'm looking at actually something in the Wall Street Journal recently about the Clinton Foundation, that they now are getting donations from the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Oman, a Canadian government agency promoting the XL pipeline. Do you think that the Clinton Foundation and also her speaking fees, is that make her vulnerable at all?
I think there's certainly very predictable lines of attack. I mean, you know, the foundation, the argument that her world and officials at the foundation make is this is a charity. It does good work. You know, you are viewing this through a political lens. We do not. When you have things like Dennis Chang, who is a longtime Clinton loyalist, he worked on her 08 campaign. He was I think, a regional or a state fundraiser. He led the endowment drive. The Clintons wanted to get a roughly $250 million endowment done before she ran, in part because you really can't fundraise for the foundation while she's running. But also, there is a bigger reason, to be fair, that is not just political, which is that they don't want to rely solely on Bill Clinton as the only force to keep it going. I think in Bill Clinton's mind, he sees his philanthropic work as sort of on the scale of Bill Gates's. But Bill Gates has his own money. It's obviously not the same thing. Mm-hmm. So that was the drive behind the endowment. But yes, to your question, they took donations and pledges from foreign entities. That was pretty predictable. And when you have the same person who led that endowment drive is now about to become her finance chief on her campaign, when the person who is the interim CEO of the foundation is a longtime Clinton political loyalist who is, by all accounts, very skilled and smart and has worked in philanthropy before. But still, those become inevitable questions. Are they disqualifying? I mean, that depends on what people come up with. But at the end of the day, this is certainly predictable. That having been said, the other thing I would say on this is, in terms of the speeches and in terms of these donations, there's not a whole lot of new ground to crack on Hillary Clinton in terms of trying to create narratives about her for her opponents, in terms of trying to go through new information or in terms of vetting her. The foundation, you know, which is where she has now hung her hat for the last few years, is one of the newer areas.
And that's Maggie Haberman, presidential campaign correspondent for The New York Times, joining us in this second portion of Ballot Talks on Radio Times to talk about Hillary Rodham Clinton and if there are any other Democrats wanting to run for president. And again, you can join our conversation at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Maggie, do you think that once she does announce, then we will hear the words Benghazi, Whitewater? I'm just thinking of all the words that have trailed her over the decades now.
I think you will hear Benghazi quite a bit. And I mean, what some private polling has shown is that Benghazi has at least captured I don't think capturing the public's imagination is quite right, but it certainly has embedded itself a bit in the public consciousness. People hear it and they think that there's something there. They're not exactly sure what. I think you'll hear it. I don't think it's going to, at the end of the day, be a dominant theme, but it will be one that I think you see ads about. And look, it is certainly legitimate for her to get asked about. It is something that she's going to – I mean, what she will say is, we've asked and answered this. I talked about it in my book. I testified about it. But she will continue to get questions about it. I think that we won't know until we see her as a candidate exactly what will be prevalent. We will certainly hear all of these things all over again. But what voters will be interested in and what she will want to talk about and what she will be asked about are very open questions.
Do you think maybe it's too early to even know what voters are thinking about? They're probably not even thinking much about Hillary Rodham Clinton or any of what we're talking about, Maggie. But do you think there is a risk for her in that she is the Clinton, sort of like the Bush name, you know, the Clinton name mm-hmm. goes back for a generation or so. Mm-hmm. And that if people are looking for something new, I don't know whether they are or not, Clinton and or Bush are not new names for the public.
I think the dynastic question is certainly a problem for her. It's less of a problem for her against Jeb Bush, right? I mean, they cancel each other out in that respect. And I think what her folks would argue is, and I don't know this, but I'm guessing, there has been some interregnum between, you know, the last Clinton nominee and if she is the nominee, this one, and those were the Obama years. What I do think that you will see is her try to paint herself as, you know, sort of in line with President Obama on many things, on the economy, on domestic policy, not everything. But I think you will see a presentation of continuity between Bill Clinton policies and Obama policies presented as these are Democratic policies and this goes against Republican policies and those haven't worked. The fact that and that's going to be their argument, I suspect. The fact that the economy is improving obviously makes that easier for her to do.
We have a question from Greg in West Philadelphia saying, I will vote for Hillary, but I have hesitations. I think a lot of people in America think she's a BS artist and will say well, she needs to get out of trouble. I mean, again, because she is someone kind of a known quantity, people maybe have made up their mind about her, whether they like her or whether they don't.
I think that's certainly what polling shows. I think there are very few people who are actually undecided about Hillary Clinton. I think that at the end of the day, a lot of this is going to be about bringing out Democratic-based voters. You saw President Obama said in an interview with BuzzFeed in the last 2 weeks. I don't remember if it was last week or the week before. But Ben Smith asked him, will the Democratic nominee just sort of automatic? Is your coalition the Democratic coalition now, the coalition that elected him, which was a new Democratic coalition? And he said, I don't think anybody inherits a coalition. The president did. And the basic message there is pretty in keeping with what I suspect you'll see Hillary Clinton's folks say, which is that she's going to work for every vote. But at the end of the day, this is an election that's going to come down to a small number of states and who gets their voters out more in them.
Oh, we have a question from Kevin. What are Biden's chance for presidency? And as you said, it sort of doesn't look like he's going to go for it. But, you know, he has such a high perch that and that's often a launching pad for a presidential bid.
He does. And I think that's why he's making clear that he's not willing to cede it to Hillary Clinton, who I think he considers a friend and likes. But I think he feels that you know, he has served in government for a very long time and that he has a sense of how it works and that he has served the Obama administration loyally and was an incredibly vocal defender of the president during the 2012 reelection. And I think he doesn't feel like he wants to just give that over just yet. Now, a number of people who either advise him or are friends with him think that he will come to that conclusion eventually. I don't see a very strong path for him. I think that people see Hillary Clinton as the best chance of holding the white people in the Democratic Party see Hillary Clinton as the best chance of holding the White House. And the Democrats are now out of power in Congress. So that becomes a bigger impetus. I don't think Joe Biden's chances are very great, but I do think that Joe Biden has people in the party who love him and respect him and would like to give him his chance to figure that out.
We may be getting ahead of ourselves here, but we know that so many Democrats ran from Obama last year. Do you see Obama and assuming it's Hillary Rodham Clinton campaigning together on this Obama legacy?
I think that you will ultimately in the general election campaign post summer in you know, the fall months, you will likely see them appear together depending on what President Obama's poll numbers are. Nice. But I think it's a little too soon to say.
We have a Facebook comment from David saying, what about a Clinton-Warren ticket? I mean, you know, there are lots of fantasy tickets out there, and that is one I've seen before, Maggie.
Yeah, the VP speculation gets a little bit too much into fan fiction, but I think that it is unlikely that you will see two women running on a ticket when there is a first time major party female nominee. It I know is something that appeals to a lot of people. I just think it's unlikely, and I also think that Elizabeth Warren probably sees that she has more power from her perch in the Senate than she would as a vice anything.
We're almost out of time here, but how do you see Hillary Clinton's relationship with the press? And this goes back, of course, a couple of decades.
I wrote a piece with my former colleague and reporter extraordinaire Glenn Thrush, who is still at Politico, many months ago about Hillary Clinton's relationship with the press. And it's in short, terrible historically. She does not like the press. She doesn't trust the press. She never has. She didn't trust it in Arkansas, and she didn't trust it in Washington. The only time I have ever seen her have a good functional relationship with the press was with the local press in the 2000 Senate race when she ran in New York for the first time. And then as a senator, she still maintained some of those relationships. She, you know, the New York Post, which is where I worked at the time, had a Hillary Watch column written by then reporter Vince Morris. And her office found a way to work with Vince, and it was actually pretty effective. In 2000, she really liked her local press corps. It was the national press corps that she did not trust. This is the national press corps she'll be dealing with again.
Well, good luck with that, Maggie Haberman. And thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Presidential campaign correspondent for the New York Times, the second of two guests in this hour of Ballot Talks on Radio Times. We began our conversation with Congressman Bob Brady talking about the news last week that Philadelphia will be hosting the Democratic National Convention. And as I said earlier, next week on Ballot Talks on Radio Times, we'll be talking about how to build a Republican Party in this city. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times to find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the program. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us in this first hour. Do stay with us for hour two. We'll be right back.